Today on Vox Talks Economics, what Facebook tells us about the differences between women and men. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name's Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. Are the preferences of men and women decided by nature or nurture? The world's largest laboratory of what people like, well, Facebook, that might give us some answers. That's what a team of researchers, including Klaus de Smet of Southern Methodist University and CEPR, has attempted to establish in a new discussion paper. And Klaus joins me now. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics.
Thank you so much, Tim, for having me.
Klaus, I always assumed that in a very equal society, then women and men would just overwhelmingly have similar preferences. But it turns out, from your paper, it's not nearly that simple. So what are the theories on both sides of this question?
So actually, I agree with your initial intuition. It is, of course, natural to think that equal opportunities or equality would lead to men and women having similar preferences. However, it turns out this is not always the case. So for example, in some of the most gender equal societies, such as Finland and Sweden, the gender gap in engineering is very high. And that's a phenomenon referred to as the gender equality paradox. Of course, that particular example of engineering in Finland need not generalize to all interests and preferences. And in fact, there's two seemingly opposing theories that speak to this question. So on the one hand, we have social role theory, which kind of fits your initial intuition. It says that men and women differ mostly because of stereotypes, because of norms, because of socialization. And so in more gender equal societies, when these stereotypes weaken, we would expect men and women to become more similar in their preferences. On the other hand, there is evolutionary psychology that reaches the opposite conclusion. It says that when we have true gender equality, then everyone can be their true self. And so in more gender equal societies, it's possible that men and women can more freely express their innate predispositions, and that would show up as them becoming actually more different.
This is fascinating. It's so much richer than I thought it was. So you set out to test this. What was your initial hypothesis?
So our initial hypothesis after reading these different theories is that there's no reason to think that the two theories need to be mutually exclusive. Instead, our idea is that evolutionary psychology applies mostly to preferences that are innate, whereas social role theory applies to preferences or interests that are socially constructed. And so we thought if we can find a decent way of distinguishing between these two types of preferences, then we could test whether both theories have something useful to say.
And to test this, you've used Facebook data, which must be an enormous mine of preferences. What preferences does it capture? What level of detail does it capture them at?
Yeah, so maybe just very briefly, until now, most studies on the gender gap have focused on very specific preferences. So there's many papers written on, say, mathematics, or on whether women or men are more interested in getting a job in finance. But no study has attempted to encompass what we could call the universe of interests. And that's where these Facebook data come in. And so what we did is we used Facebook's marketing API to get information on the share of female and male Facebook users that are interested in 45,000 different topics. And we did this pretty much for all countries of the world. So, for example, this would tell you how many men and how many women in Turkey are interested in BMW, or how many men and how many women in Singapore might be interested in poetry. And because of these very large number of interests, it really covers pretty much everything you can think of. Cuisine, politics, spirituality, sports, family, travels, really anything that humans might be interested in is covered in this data set. And so once we have these data on these 45,000 different interests, we can compute measures of how different men and women are across all these interests in the different countries of the world.
But Klaus, Facebook compiles this from likes and shares and clicks. These are very low stakes activities, aren't they? Can we be sure that these are predictors of the behavior of these people outside of Facebook?
Yeah, that's of course a very good question. So let's maybe talk very briefly about how Facebook determines what is of interest to you.
Oh, yes.
So essentially, Facebook observes, as you said, what you read, what you share, what you like, what you download, etc. But not just on its own platform, but pretty much on all web pages where Facebook has a presence. And that's about 30% of worldwide web pages. And in addition, it actually also observes much of your offline activity. So as long as you are carrying a cell phone that has GPS tracking, if you are someone, for instance, who goes for a run every day, or if you're someone who goes every evening to the same pub, Facebook is likely to notice, right? And so in our view, what this is essentially telling us is that Facebook is playing the role of what the ethnographer used to do at a very small scale, which is it actually gets to peer into the lives of people in a way that is unobstructed. And rather than sitting there and observing a society for days or weeks at a small scale, it does this at a massive scale because it really gets to peer into the lives of billions of people. Now, the question you asked, to what extent does this carry over into real life? In other work, what we've shown is that when you take distances between countries based on Facebook interests, these correlate actually very strongly with distances between countries based on surveys that inquire about people's values, norms, interests, attitudes. And so we think it captures something real, and it has that additional advantage that it's not a top-down approach where the survey designer decides what might be of interest to you, but it's a bottom-up approach where we get to see people's revealed preference in a very comprehensive way, including many things that maybe a social scientist ex ante would not think is important, simply because it's a very comprehensive measure.
We should make the point, shouldn't we, that this is marketing data, and so it is aggregated, so that there are no privacy implications of this.
That's right. So everything we are observing is at the level of groups. So we would know, as I said, how many women in Zambia are interested in gardening, but we would not know whether you as an individual like something. So yes, there's no privacy issues involved.
Okay, using this data, how strong is the association between a country's gender equality and its gender gap in preferences?
So when we use gender differences based on all 45,000 interests together, we actually do not find a very strong relation between a country's gender equality and its gender gap in preferences. We only find interesting results when we start unpacking these interests.
So you have to distinguish between gender-related interests and non-gender-related interests. What sort of terms can you make a meaningful distinction here? What terms are not gender-related and what terms are gender-related in your data?
So we call an interest gender-related if it exhibits the same gender bias across the globe. So for example, in essentially all countries of the world, men are more interested in cars, in video games, and in football than women.
Okay.
And essentially in all countries of the world, women are more interested in spas, in romance novels, and in children.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so we call those gender-related interests. And then we call interests non-gender-related if the bias is different across countries. So, for example, travel is a good example, or fitness. What we will see is in some countries, this is more popular amongst men. In other countries, it's more popular amongst women. And so we say that is an interest that is non-gender related. So that's the distinction we make.
When you separate these terms, what does that do for your results?
So once we distinguish between these two types of interests, we find something very interesting. For gender-related interests, such as soccer or children, the difference between men and women is greater in more gender-equal countries. So say in Scandinavia, the differences are bigger. Whereas for non-gender-related interests, such as traveling or fitness, we find precisely the opposite. Men and women, say in countries like in the Scandinavian region, they will be more alike in those types of preferences.
So that means that your hypothesis is supported here, that these theories do coexist.
Indeed. So remember that evolutionary psychology applies to innate preferences,
mm-hmm.
and social role theory applies to socially constructed preferences. There's, of course, no foolproof way to differentiate innate preferences from socially constructed preferences.
Mm-hmm.
But we take the view that for an interest to be innate, it is reasonable to expect that it would express the same gender bias in all countries of the world. That's the view we take. So let me give you an example. Say I take an interest such as traveling. If it's more popular amongst men in some countries and more popular amongst women in other countries, it's unlikely to be an innate preference. However, if an interest such as sports or war, for instance, are more popular among men in all countries of the world, then it is potentially innate. We're not sure it is innate, but it could be innate. It's potentially innate. And so once we make that distinction, then our results concur with these two theories, because for these potentially innate interests, the ones that are gender-related and show the same gender bias everywhere, such as sports and wars, men and women are indeed more different in these gender equal societies, which is what evolutionary psychology predicts. But then for the non-gender related interests, which cannot be innate and hence might very well be socially constructed, such as traveling or fitness or other interests, the opposite holds, right? And that again is what social role theory would predict.
Some people might criticize what you're doing in creating this category of potentially innate interest, because it's a little bit of a circular argument, isn't it? That you look at the data and then decide that they must be innate because that's what they look like in the data, when you could just say that they're not necessarily innate. It's just the social conditioning is stronger, which is why they're consistent across countries at the moment.
Yes, so they might be socially conditioned, but they would have to be socially conditioned in exactly the same way across all countries of the world.
Mm.
And so maybe that's possible, right? Through a process of globalization and diffusion of cultural norms, it is, of course, possible that some of these gender-related preferences have been globally socially constructed. But it's unlikely that it applies to all of these gender-related preferences. But I agree, you could take, say, an example such as soccer, right? You could say, is that an innate preference? Maybe we know that because of hormonal differences, men tend to be more interested in competition than women. Maybe sports or soccer is a form of competition. So there might be something innate about it. Of course, you could say it is also possible that soccer became more popular among men in England when it started off, and then because of process of globalization and diffusion of interests, it became popular among men pretty much across the globe. That's a possibility. So the non-gender or the gender-related preferences is maybe the better way of expressing things. Mm. That's where really the results are. The only thing we're saying is that it is consistent with an interpretation of these two theories when we take the view that gender-related preferences have the potential of being innate.
There's an entire podcast we've got to do sometime about the evolution of women's soccer, which is a wonderful story about,
yes,
about gender
indeed.
Differences and discrimination. But, Klaus, you've got something interesting here. If these two theories aren't an either-or, but can both exist in the world, what can this tell us about the way we should organise policy or the way we should structure society? Are there implications from this?
So I would say that policies that reduce barriers and give equal opportunities to men and women are always good. They're likely to greatly increase welfare, partly because it leads to a better allocation of talent, but also partly because in a more free society with more equal opportunity, everyone can live up to their true interests and aspirations. So I think reducing barriers is always good, independently of whether preferences are socially constructed or innate. However, for certain more specific policies, things might become a little bit less clear. So for instance, suppose we were to talk about strict gender quota in particular professions or in particular activities. If differences are mostly socially constructed, it might seem desirable to say we should aim in the long run to get to a 50-50 presence of men and women in all these activities and professions if they're socially constructed. Whereas if certain differences are innate, then it becomes a little bit less obvious that 50-50 is necessarily the optimal allocation that we should pursue. So for instance, you could imagine that in the medical profession, that it might be 70-30 or 60-40 in favor of women. And then maybe in the engineering profession or in computer science, it might be the other way around. That might be fine if it really reflects innate preferences. If it's socially constructed, we should keep aiming probably, I think, for 50-50 everywhere. So trying to understand and comprehend these differences better, I think, is a worthwhile undertaking for future research. I think we've taken an important step in that direction, but there's lots of work that still needs to be done.
As you say, a step with this research, but there's no way that this debate is going away, and it does lead us into some very interesting areas. But that's all the time we have for today, Klaus. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tim. I enjoyed talking to you.
The paper is called The Gender Gap in Preferences, Evidence from 45,397 Facebook Interests. And the authors are Angel and Ruben Cuevas, Klaus de Smet, and Ignacio Ortuño Orchin. It is discussion paper 16740 at CEPR. And it is a discussion paper that I am sure you will like to read, and I'm sure you'll have an opinion on when you've read it. This has been a Vox Talk from the Center for Economic Policy Research. Every week we bring you the most important latest research. If you want to know what you're going to be reading in journals 18 months from now, listen to Vox Talks Economics Today. And when you subscribe, you'll be able to listen on your phone to almost 200 episodes now. And they're on every topic from piracy to prison reform. So whatever type of economics you prefer, you'll find a Vox Talk that you want to listen to.